such sights to show you.
We need some Reagan-era optimism here, despite all the bullshit. That's what we need.
Yes, because nothing makes me happier than Ronald fucking Reagan.
Hey, hey, it's a message of positivity while everything's falling apart. All right, that's the American dream.
Okay, but here's the thing. In the grand scheme of things, this is the most successful and technically happiest we've ever been.
That's a good point. It's weird when you level up, huh?
This is the most successful and happiest. I just got a raise, so I'm making the most money I've ever made in my entire life.
Yeah, and I'm doing pretty good financially, yeah. and working in an industry that is exactly what I want.
Exactly.
Kind of.
So technically,
foot in the door in a certain kind of way, but okay.
Yeah, technically, this is the happiest we've ever been, and yet. Somehow, we're still just like, oh my fucking God.
Life just keeps going, huh? Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, life continues boldly forward. And you know what? I think this is a great chance just for us to go back to good old 1985.
You know what? If only we had a certain substance that would make us forget about all of our troubles and just consume, 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 huh?
Just good old capitalism through and through.
Ugh. Let's fucking go. Let's do it. Let's just go. Let's just go.
Oh, you sound so sick.
No, I'm dedicated right now. We're fucking doing it.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Who's a wazzle?
Yep. Who's a wazzle?
Positivity. Yeah.
Ooh, positivity. First off, happy birthday month, Anthony Fuentes.
Oh, I've been so busy, I actually totally forgot that this is my fucking birthday month, yes! Oh. Ooh, no, this is good, this is exactly what I want, so yes, hey, cool everybody, what's up? It's birthday time,
yeah,
my favorite time of the year, there's no holiday except St. Patrick's Day, but I'm a boozer anyway, so it all works out, and we're gonna get fucking weird this year, I mean, we got weird last year, but we're still gonna be fucking weird, so,
absolutely. We're gonna start off pretty weird. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so we're talking about the stuff from 1985. I'm very excited to talk about this.
Yeah, you hadn't seen it before, huh?
I had not seen it before. My viewing was less than 24 hours ago, so it's fresh in the brain.
Oh, that's good.
I immediately Googled where I could find the stuff ice cream, because even though I know it wasn't the same alien weird goop, I needed to know what it tasted like. Like, I just wanted, like, it could have tasted like fucking vanilla for all I cared. I just wanted some. Unfortunately, I couldn't find any, but.
Oh no. A gimmick 1985 treat from a flop movie, just they didn't have any product, huh?
I've seen it before. That's why I said it. Because I think Ben and Jerry's actually did it for a time. So, fuck you.
And hey, Ben and Jerry's got taste. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So, to jump right in, IMDb, of course, has to introduce this ridiculous movie with, quote, "A delicious, mysterious goo that oozes from the earth is marketed as the newest dessert sensation, but the tasty treat rots more than teeth when zombie-like snackers who only want to consume more of the strange substance at any cost begin infesting the world," unquote.
Wow.
Holy
run-on sentence, Batman. All right. I mean, you know, details, though. That's good. At least they have details.
I mean, try saying that in one breath. Like, Jesus Christ.
No, you sound exhausted already. I'm not going to do that.
This was written and directed by Larry Cohen, and it's starring Michael Moriarty and Andrea Markovici, Garrett Morris, and Paul Sorvino.
Ooh, that is... Okay, Michael Moriarty and Paul Sorvino are who I'm familiar with. Else is just here.
I don't know any of these people.
Well, Paul Sorvino has a very iconic role in Goodfellas, so everybody knows him.
Gotcha. Okay, this was... Yeah. Okay, still haven't seen Goodfellas.
Oh my God, you're missing out.
Cool. You know what?
We had the conversation about this during Super Bowl, I'm pretty sure.
We did. We did have this conversation, and you were just like, what the fuck? Yes.
Yes,
yes. You and Phil both.
My hungover ass on Super Bowl while everyone else is getting turned.
Jesus Christ. Anthony stumbled into to James's Super Bowl party just like fucking dead. Like just
destroyed.
Like a walking corpse. Like it was bad.
And everyone else was having such a great time. It was fantastic.
I had so much fun.
Oh my God. I was miserable.
This is the first time, I want to say probably since college, I got like turned enough to cause physical injury. Like I hurt my ankle.
Oh shit.
I'm still injured.
Damn. It was a good time, though, despite me being
so
a
much
piece of
fun.
Shit.
No, yeah. I had so much fun. Anyway.
Look at us.
I know. Anyway, so this movie was budgeted at $1.7 million. It was released on my birthday, June 14th, 10 years earlier in 1985.
Oh, how special for my birthday month. It released on your birthday month. That is fantastic.
Oh, exactly on my birthday, too. That's so funny. And it's gross. Nah. Je ne sais pas.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. We know it was bad. That's what we know. What
so
you know?
We know that it tanked horribly.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, but before we get to the story of how they fucked this one up, but also made something pretty fun. So, we got to talk about the good old 80s and something that we've touched upon, but I feel my birthday month, we got to really dig in on this bitch. So, we've been covering a lot of the 80s. We've been in and out of the era, like, this season more than usual, honestly. But, you know, surprisingly. But what is it about this tumultuous decade that makes it so ripe for commentary from the creatives who are making movies at this time? Well, one big word everyone is familiar with now, I think, is the culprit, Alex. I think it's the culprit. What word is that?
The outline says consumerism.
Oh boy, look at you reading. All right.
I know words.
Yes.
I passed second grade. The word of the day is consumerism.
I read good.
I read English good.
So, yes, we're talking about good old consumerism. This trend toward corporate greed and mass marketing was thrust upon the American people pretty much immediately after the Second World War, when the country was experiencing a major boom period. And, of course, the international competition was kind of rebuilding itself at this time. You know, fucking lots of destroyed buildings.
World War.
Yeah, it's one of the world wars, yes, for sure. But
one of two so far.
One of two so far. Yeah, there we go, Crimea. But by the time of the election of good old 1979, many Americans found themselves in a nation that wasn't exactly thriving in the same way that they were used to. But still, with an insatiable desire for more things, surprisingly. The tobacco companies in particular being major culprits in this, as their products were addictive in, I would say, a very literal sense.
Yeah.
Pretty literal.
Yeah.
Yeah, like synapses and all that shit. So this became most apparent in Jimmy Carter's A Crisis of Confidence speech, where he addressed the nation on changes in our core values, as well as admitting fault on some of his own mishaps during his presidency. The man was too honest. You were supposed to bullshit, sir. That's not good.
As a president,
so, you know how,
you are contractually obligated to bullshit.
Yeah, yes. Feed us candy. This whole realism thing is not great for your election prospects. So, one segment of his speech stuck out in particular to many listening. I'm going to quote it right now. I'm not going to do a Carter voice because I don't remember what he sounds like. So, quote, in a nation that was proud of hard work, strong families, close to communities, and our faith in God, too many of us now tend to worship self-indulgence and consumption. Human identity is no longer defined by what one does, but by what one owns. But we've discovered that owning things and consuming things does not satisfy our longing for meaning. We've learned that piling up material goods cannot fill the emptiness of lives which have no confidence or purpose. End quote.
How crazy is it that they took that, like, they, meaning America at large, took that and was just like, how can we take it to another fucking extreme?
Is that a challenge, sir?
Yeah.
Is that a
fucking
challenge?
Are you
fucking
challenging me?
Is that an order from the top?
Yeah. Literally, like, he was just like, I need you guys to be greedier. Like, pretty much, I think that, like, in one ear and out the other. Like, if he thought it was that bad in the 80s.
Not even the 80s, 79, right? Yeah. The cusp of the 80s. The cusp.
Okay, yeah. In 1979. In 1979. God, how is he not, like, how is he not dead yet? Like,
because he's an honest fucking man.
I get it.
He's just an honest dude.
Given our fucking track record, now that I've said it, I probably just killed Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, damn. He's one of the good ones. We keep mentioning Mitch McConnell, though, so maybe it's like,
I know.
Are immune. Paul's are immune. who's also probably an honest man, but his heart is black, so he's just honest about his shit.
His soul is fucking ice.
Oh, absolutely. Now, this was a turning point for Carter's run for presidency, actually, but not in the way that he had anticipated. So, sure, immediately after this, his popularity did shoot up 11 points, something very unheard of, even for modern times. But a few political mishaps and an unfortunate cabinet firings immediately after the speech gave the American people an impression of weakness from the, once again, too honest elected official. So, I mean, it's not that the speech was bad. People resonated with it. It's just his actions afterwards tainted their confidence in him and thus the confidence of his message, which really fucked everything up. So his own party cannibalized him, citing the pessimism from the speech as an example of his inability to lead. And then came Ronald fucking Reagan.
I'm sorry, what does it say on the outline?
Ron Ladd Reagan. You know, the Scottish fucking...
I was thinking more like his Simpsons evil, or like his Simpsons...
Oh, his doppelganger?
Yeah. Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. Smash. The then leader of the Republican Party definitely changed the political landscape, but in ways that were, let's just say, less honest than Carter. He turned Carter's message against him, saying, I find no national malaise. I find nothing wrong with the American people. And, and despite the country's need to rein in resources, gas in particular, as we were having a crisis at this time, and a surge of other issues, Reagan promoted optimism, which made people feel great at the time, despite not offering the most sensible solutions to the country's growing ails. Even his own party would criticize his policies, mostly trickle-down economics, which his primary challenger and eventual VP successor, George H.W. Bush, called voodoo economics.
Great.
Oh, you know, polling, though, when that turns around. But again, eventually Reagan would win and change the impression of conservative values in the national dialogue, actually. So Wall Street saw some of its biggest gains. Christian morality would take on a far more aggressive approach to the mainstream.
Great.
With abortion being suddenly a national issue.
Great.
Branding was now the name of the game. Reality, just be damned. Not even worried about it. So, during the election of 1984, oddly enough, when this movie was produced, members of the Democratic Party asked factory workers why they're voting for Reagan, despite his policies potentially being harmful to organized labor in general. The response? With Reagan, we stand tall.
You know, that's it. This reminds me of something that happened in 2016, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
No, yeah. These are real problems. How are we going to handle this? Just make it bigger. Yeah.
Let's just attach a catchy catchphrase and...
Mm-hmm. Put on a hat. Oh, look at the hats. The hats are selling good. Oh, boy. Yeah. So, sure. By any metric, this point in history is when the middle class started shrinking and wages began to stagnate. But you'd be hard-pressed to find a supporter of the new American right that believed all of those facts or even gave a shit. After all, companies were allowed to aggressively market to children now. That regulation was gone. No need for the fairness doctrine either, because giving equal time to opposing opinions didn't end up mattering if people just didn't care to listen.
Yeah. This is... Oh my god. This is like the beginning of the end, dude.
I mean, it's the beginning of our default, unfortunately. Yeah, so,
well,
yeah.
The beginning of, what now, this is the... I mean, sure, there have been a lot of other long-standing issues, and capitalism is a fucking shit show that we do not have time to get into, because this is a horror podcast. And yes, the big horror of the world is capitalism, but that's too much of a horror for us.
It's actually genuinely horrifying, yes.
But, all these things you just went over, which, by the way, I am not good at politics. Politics is not my strong suit. It's just, this is the snowball. This is the snowball that turned into a fucking huger snowball.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And we had a chance to piss the snowball into the ground. But, again... Nice. Just a couple cabinet firings and one really charismatic piece of shit. It's all text.
I mean, the fairness doctrine. I mean, That's crazy. Or even the ability to market to children super aggressively. Like,
oh yeah, that's why 80s cartoons are what they are. Yeah, that's exactly why. Yeah.
That's so wild.
Oh, Alex, America was changing at this time. And a counterculture, actually, though, again, surfaced against this. And this is where, I'm going to bring this back right now, this is where horror made its biggest fucking gains. As a giant middle finger to the values that were taking over the national conversation, of course. That's what horror does. Thankfully, horror is also very cheap to produce and easy to make money off of. And very few directors could do this as well as the very politically conscious Larry Cohen.
Or so he thought.
Yeah. It's still cheap to produce.
So yeah, I mean, at $1.7 million in 1984, I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, director Larry Cohen came of age in the described post-war boom, being an avid consumer of films as a child, watching as many as 4 a week. Oh my god, 4 movies a week?
Mm-hmm. In the theater.
In the theater. After college, he learned his craft in TV writing during the 1950s, getting his start in science fiction with his very own show called The Invaders. It only lasted 2 seasons on ABC, but was an early example of anti-communist commentary in television. This apparently pissed off a lot of left-leaning producers.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's got his finger on the pulse, but yeah, during that time, it's definitely after McCarthy fucking everything up, so there's something going on back there.
Yeah, that is a low-flying helicopter. They heard me say communism.
Communism. Get her. Put her on the blacklist.
Oh, no.
Oh, they're flying away. It's good. So this is all coming out immediately after the McCarthy era. So there were still definitely people that were affected by McCarthy's tirade against, you know, suspected communists in positions of power. And, so it's a very tumultuous time for people left and right, honestly. Yeah.
I just like that he got 2 seasons and that was considered like, we'll give him a shot.
Yeah. Oh, early TV too. Yeah.
Right. So when the 70s came around, he moved toward directing and made his debut with the black comedy Bones, followed up by the low budget horror film It's Alive, which is fucking amazing.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It is so, so good.
Oh, man, if only we didn't cover his origins right now.
No, yeah, it's totally fine. It's Alive is being saved, like, for many, many years down the line in the podcast when I inevitably have to go on maternity leave.
All right.
It is
good to know.
It is so, so... watched it in my gender and horror, or gender and film class in college, and it was, like, one of those, like... I mean, it was in the 70s, so when I watched it, I was like, this movie's old.
Yeah.
But even then, I was just like, this is so fucking fun. Like, it was just the same kind of, like, schlock that you see in the stuff, right? Where you're just like, this is ridiculous. But I got, it's a little bit more serious, and it's Alive, but it's fucking fun, dude. Anyway.
Yeah, this is where he got his chops, and he actually did 3 blaxploitation films before that.
Oh,
so,
yeah, cool.
And he's a total white dude, so it's very interesting. And they're very iconic ones, too. It's crazy.
Interesting. I didn't know that. So, he only started directing because he did not like how others were handling material that he wrote, so he was a real, I don't know. He was very, I guess, attentive.
Yeah.
So the latter turned into a trilogy and tells the story about a deformed monster baby that goes on a killing spree. It's so good. Just think about that. It is a deformed monster baby, and you can see the deformed monster baby. It's so good.
I gotta watch after this.
It's also a quick watch. I don't think it's too terribly long. So, turns out, it's a commentary on the effects of chemicals being introduced to the ecosystem, as well as the effects of experimental prescription drugs on unborn babies. So, is this like a Children of Thalidomide kind of deal?
What? Children of Thalidomide?
Yeah.
What's that?
So, it's, first of all, I learned it from We Didn't Start the Fire, but it's kids who were born with deformities when because it was this prescription drug called thalidomide that was supposed to stop morning sickness, but it caused mm-hmm. like children being born without limbs or just, like, horrible birth
defects. That's the exact influence. That's okay. The exact influence.
So that's what it is. Okay. I was just connecting my dots to historical events that I knew about. Okay.
Again, he's very conscious of this stuff. It's fucking crazy.
That's cool. I mean, abortion was also explored in the movie, prompting critics to praise the filmmaker for his boldness in invoking such a taboo subject. Not much has changed.
Yep.
Now, at this point, Larry Cohen was gaining a reputation for two things: his filmmaking process and the political themes of his work. He was somehow able to make low-budget films look top dollar, all while being genre-driven. Additionally, all of his films had a strong political theme, but no one could pinpoint what side he truly fell on, as the leanings of each film would vary wildly. If you were to ask the man himself, he would tell you all of his films are independent in their political leanings, not taking a side, but rather just tackling an issue that has taken America's attention. Spoken like a true independent.
Oh, yeah. Look at him.
But by the end of the 70s, the landscape of the industry was changing. The drive-in and local independent theaters were his bread and butter, and they were closing. And the slasher genre was taking over horror. Larry, of course, had to adapt.
I mean, yeah, that's how you keep going.
You have to. Sink or swim, buddy. His films were always on the pulse, as his policy was, if it sells, it works. And in horror, challenging the establishment was very much in, and big business wouldn't be out of Cohen's crosshairs, as he had a lot to say.
Yeah, I like that at the end of the day, he's just like, listen, it's got to make money. But also, it's like,
but also, like, I'm gonna, like, say a big fuck you.
Yes, exactly. He likes to have his cake and eat it,
too. You know, I respect that, and I don't disagree with that ethos.
Yeah, you don't have to always be stringently side. Just, you have to just be like, this is the issue.
Well,
this
also, it's wrong. Like, you don't have to be a starving artist. You can still say fuck you to the establishment while making money.
Exactly, right? They're not mutually exclusive.
Exactly. So regarding his next film, The Stuff, Cohen stated, quote, "My main inspiration was the consumerism and corporate greed found in our country and the damaging products that were being sold. I was constantly reading in the newspapers about various goods and materials being recalled because they were harming people. For example, you had foods being pulled off the market because they were hazardous to people's health," unquote. Which, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We totally talk about that, like, right now, yes.
Yes.
He's got it on board. He's good.
Yeah. Cohen also was not restricted to attacking a newly emboldened corporate America, as, like Carter, he turned his attention to consumers, particularly America's addiction to fast food. Quote, "The sheer volume of junk food we consume every day. We continue to eat these foods despite the fact that some of them are killing us. That's when I started thinking that The Stuff could be an imaginary product, in this case an ice cream dessert, that is being consumed by millions and is doing irreparable damage to humanity. Everybody is gobbling down this yummy food, so how can it possibly be wrong for us?" Unquote. Jesus Christ. Early health panic.
Oh, I know. I wonder if he'd be a wellness bro now.
Oh, no. Probably. He'd probably, like, insist on only eating, like, stuff he grew himself or, like, it's, like, raw organic foods. When The Stuff was finally completed, the studio hated it and trimmed around 30 minutes of footage from the final product, as they were expecting more of a straight-up horror film than a horror comedy that they ended up with, which... whatever.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad it got the tone that it does on comparatively.
I love it.
Yeah, I agree. This is a pretty ambitious movie. But when it came time to open, The Stuff was given a limited theatrical release on a weekend of a major hurricane. So.
Oh no.
Yeah. This is not the best scenario for getting word of mouth out there, for sure. And of course, on this, Cohen says, quote, "The day The Stuff opened in New York, a hurricane hit and the newspapers were not delivered. Of course, we had received all these great reviews, but it didn't matter because nobody ever got to read a single word of them," end quote. No. Poor bastard.
That's bad luck.
Yeah, and that's back when, like, you know, the press was really important to getting word of mouth out.
Well, yeah, it's back when, you know, you had to get your reviews in a newspaper.
Uh-huh. And people read that shit. Those fucking weirdos. So
those fucking weirdos.
Right? So the reviews, again, they were actually pretty stellar, with one major holdout well known to this podcast. So, the stuff has a 71% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, with most of the outlier critics being from Chicago.
Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Known Chicago critic Roger Ebert gave this stuff a 1.5-star rating, yes, concluding his review by saying, "The stuff has moments when it comes alive because of the ingenuity of the actors and Cohen's willingness to have fun with his material. But the story doesn't work and the stuff isn't as interesting as, say, Flying Lizards. What we have here are a lot of nice touches in search of a movie."
What?
End quote.
He didn't get it.
He didn't get it.
Like, you have to... Oh, God. This movie is like, if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah, he definitely did. I think he was looking for something else also. Like, yeah. Again, yeah.
Just apparently he was looking for fucking Flying Lizards.
Yeah, right? I don't know. We can't always agree with Ebert. He's back and forth.
I mean,
this one I think he got wrong.
He waffles a lot on horror films, so...
True.
I understand that, you know, you have a nostalgic attachment to him, but, you know, there are other critics.
Oh, yeah, but he's my boy. So, Tom Long of the Santa Cruz Sentinel was far more forgiving, though, saying, quote, "The stuff probably won't make anybody's list of best films of the year, but it is an inspired, goofy, fast-moving piece of sci-fi silliness. Probably destined to become a cult movie." End quote.
Wow. Looking into the future, Tom Long?
Yeah, there you go. Who the fuck is Tom? Okay, we'll find more of him, I'm sure. Now, there's no box office info for the stuff, but it definitely didn't make its budget back. Oof. However meager that budget was, yeah. Still, Cohen did win a suit against one of the effects companies that worked on the film, which delivered some very unsatisfactory explosions. Cohen only agreed to pay half, and since there was no written agreement, he managed to get away with this shit. So,
damn. Hey, I didn't think they were that bad.
No, I think it's probably just...
Oh, were they cut from the film?
No, I really think he was trying to do something bigger. So, he's very specific. But of course, how does the stuff hold up with audiences today? You know what's going down.
I was looking forward to this. I made a point to not look at Letterboxd before this.
Well, the stuff has a 3.1 rating out of 4.5K reviews, which, not bad. Not bad. 3.1, pretty good. 4.5, you can work on it, but, you know, we get there.
Yeah.
Okay. Nathaxan Hiatus. Fucking weird name.
Yeah.
Gives the film 4 stars, saying, quote, "Perhaps the quintessential Reagan-era horror satire. The stuff offers a capitalist realist reimagining of 1950s sci-fi horrors of being absorbed and controlled, primarily the blob and the invasion of the body snatchers, realizing, however, that corporate control of the food supply and the manufactured desire for its consumption offer an American totalitarianism just as pernicious as any prior iteration." End
Jesus
quote.
Christ.
It's okay. As wordy as that was, Josh Lewis does say in his 3-star review, quote, "I'd eat it."
I can't argue that. I literally was Googling while watching the movie where I could buy some of the stuff.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right? They market it really well.
Like, even though I knew it was bad and it was, I don't know, it could have been alien jizz for all I know. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it most likely is.
I still was just like, I really want to try it because everyone's so obsessed with it.
Oh, boy. Now, of course, Ian West also gives the movie a 3-star review with a slightly, little bit more detail, saying, quote, "I love The Blob and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and the stuff feels like the perfect hodgepodge of those movies as well as, at least to me, an essential Reagan-era corporate greed consumerism horror comedy satire." God damn.
See, what's funny is, for me, I thought this was like a combination of Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Halloween 3.
It has a Halloween 3 vibe like a motherfucker.
I think Halloween 3 definitely came out after,
before.
Did it come out before? 83? So it came out the year, like 2 years before. So for me, it definitely has Season of the Witch vibes.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see where everyone's connecting the Blob and Invasion of the Body Snatchers because it has it definitely has like sci-fi elements.
For sure.
I mean, or it is very sci-fi heavy. But yeah, I was watching, I'm like, I'm getting like some corporate, like, yeah, the Reagan, yeah, greed vibes, but yeah, I like that.
I think so too. I think it's a big strength of the movie, and honestly, also it does have almost the tonally like a Killer Clowns kind of vibe to me.
Yeah, so yeah, Killer Clowns meets the Blob meets Halloween 3.
Yes, that's exactly. That's such a good summation right there. I agree. There we go.
I love it. With a sprinkling of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
A little bit in there. Now, of course, we got to finally conclude our Letterboxd stuff with Kyle Zeman's 4-star review for this stuff, which simply says, quote, fuck capitalism.
Agreed. Agreed, Kyle.
So, yeah. Larry Cohen moved more towards screenwriting once the 90s came around and administration changed hands, but still found a way to involve himself in many cheesy movies like Maniac Cop.
Nice.
Maniac Cop 2.
Nice.
And Maniac Cop 3 Badge of Silence.
Nice.
So, yeah, quite the repertoire. But he did manage to find more high-profile work in Hollywood, writing Phone Booth, which inevitably was directed, by Joel Schumacher and starred Colin Farrell. So,
did you know Colin Farrell plays the Penguin
I know where you're going. In what, Alex? Where does he plays the Penguin in what?
In the Happy Batman.
Feet 3 or what? The Batman. Running inside joke fans, just so you know.
I hope Phil's listening to this and he's laughing his ass off.
I hope he is. Motherfucker. So, but I mean, back to our friend Larry Cohen here. He lived a full life as a surprisingly prolific B-movie director and died in his Beverly Hills home just a couple years ago in 2019 at a full ripe age of 82.
Oh, thank God he didn't make it to COVID.
I know. Seriously. But I mean, hey, he left his fucking mark. So there you go.
No, totally. I like how we were just like, oh, this is the first movie we've covered by this director. Let's just cover his entire life story.
Yes, because I don't know what else to... I mean, he's got a lot of weird stuff.
But I mean,
like,
yeah.
I was
Man,
mostly,
now I want to watch Phone Booth. God damn it.
I know. We can still...
Phone Booth isn't really a horror movie.
Yeah, that's true. It's more of a...
It's like...
I mean,
it's an action thriller at best.
Action thriller, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Maybe a birthday. Not even then.
It's not even
stuff.
Then. It's just a fun Joel Schumacher movie. Like, that's it. That's all it is.
I just want to cover more Joel Schumacher. That guy's great.
Yeah.
All right. So, with that, how about a little play-by-play? Want to run through?
Yeah, let's talk about this movie.
Oh, God. You want red or white? Red or white?
I'll do red.
All right. Let's fucking kick it off, then.
Okie dokie. Also, if you have not seen this stuff, it's on Shudder. Go watch it. It's fun.
It's on Shudder?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I watched it on Tubi with fucking ads.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's on Shudder.
It's on Tubi also if you guys don't have Shudder. But seriously, I'm going to say right now, watch the stuff. Like, watch
the stuff.
Watch the stuff. It's very good.
It's very fun. It's also, like, it's an hour and 26 minutes. Or 23 minutes. Like, it's obscenely short.
Yeah, honestly, like, I did a fast forward and pausing for the play-by-play because, and it went like nothing. It went like nothing, really.
Also, you wrote the play-by-play yourself?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote all like that. I always rewind and fast forward. That's just my style, baby.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You are far more dedicated than me. I copy it from Wikipedia.
Oh, my God. And here we just elaborate.
This is how the sausage gets made, people. Okay, so the stuff. We start with a very abrupt shot of a weird white substance bubbling from the ground and grabbing the attention of a few quarry workers, one of which says, fuck it, and tastes a bit, finding the substance to be actually quite delicious. Which, again, who the fuck sees, like, mysterious white substances bubbling out of the ground and thinks I should put that in my mouth?
I don't know. I mean, I think the first shot is supposed to not make enough much sense, so the rest of the movie you're not really blown off.
It's true. It's a ridiculous opening, so you kind of know within the first 30 seconds, I shit you not, 30 seconds, that you know what you're in for.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't even... It's not even, like, dramatic or anything. It's just like, okay, camera down. Holy shit, this guy found something. Bam. This is really good. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's fucking it. But we then jump forward a little bit. We meet a young fella named Jason, who... he's, like, 9 or 12 years old. I don't fucking know. Who makes his way to the fridge for a midnight snack and notices one of the snacks, a creamy white ice cream-like substance, starts moving on its own. And, of course, this freaks the kid out almost as much... as his dad interrupting him and sending him right back upstairs with the good old 1980s parents ass smacking. Papa then makes his way to the fridge.
Okay, this whole thing was just like, don't you ever do that again. Get your ass back upstairs. I'm going to hit you on the ass because I'm a parent trying to discipline my child in the 80s. Like, what the fuck is that?
The dad seems like a piece of shit.
What the fuck is up with that? Yeah, you know what? And even though he's not being currently mind controlled, he's a piece of shit. So I know he's a piece of shit. 24/7.
He's already very aggressive. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, he's kind of a douchebag. So very quickly, the substance becomes a very successful and addictive consumer product sold in ice cream containers. They call it the stuff, and it has no calories.
I mean, you gotta say it like the people. Like, it has no calories. Like,
everyone talks like it's an ad. They call it the stuff, and it has no calories.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, the ads themselves are very fun too. Like, I left this detail out. Apparently, Larry Cohen shot a bunch more. He shot the ads. And the studio was like, nope, we're gonna cut it.
Stop it.
He actually wanted to use these ads as
ads for the commercials movie?
Yes, and they stopped them from doing that too.
That would have been so fun, and it would have been so ahead of its time for fucking marketing.
Agree. And the studio just were like, no, we don't want the people to know this.
Assholes. What studio distributed this?
I didn't even put it down. Fuck them.
I know, like, what a bad decision on your part, studio. Shame to the studio.
Shame. This ends up hurting actual ice cream sales, so the suffering conglomerates hire someone to investigate how the stuff so quickly took over the market. This person, being former FBI investigator turned industrial spy David Mo Rutherford, who immediately comments on how sweaty everyone's palms are. Of course, they're a little apprehensive, but Mo gives them his famous, you know why they call me Mo, line, and quells their fears.
Okay, so,
and why do they call him Mo?
Because I don't remember
it's when somebody gives him money.
He asks for Mo. Which was ridiculous coming from a white man.
Yeah. And this is Michael Moriarty, by the way. So he's interesting.
He is interesting. So I love that there is something known as an ice cream conglomerate in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there is some, like, some weird, shifty motherfuckers who are in charge of ice cream companies. In my mind, the people in charge of, like, fucking Blue Bunny and, like, Dyers are just, like, jolly men in, like, pinstripe suits and top hats. Yeah. Like, and they laugh all the time. Like, they're jolly motherfuckers. Like, they're not, like, laughing in a corner evilly, like, mwahaha. Like, it's so, I don't know.
I feel like this movie makes a point that every suit is a little malicious.
Yeah.
Like, every single one of them. This movie's like, yeah, even the people that are suffering for this and that could, you know, they're not stopping it for the good of everybody. They're stopping it because, like, it's hurting their bottom line.
And also industrial espionage being, like, a focal point of this movie. I'm just like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a thing.
I'm not involved in industrial anything, really. So I'm just like, oh, this is interesting and totally not legit. This is just part of a movie. Little did I know, there's actually, you know, industrial espionage. People out here spying on other companies and shit.
You gotta make those quarterly goals, Alex. You gotta make those quarterly goals.
Oh, God, I'd rather shoot myself in the foot.
Don't do it, please.
Meanwhile, Jason is doing his best to make sure his family doesn't eat the stuff, and even tells them he saw it move, but they're just so impressed with it that they ignore him completely and keep singing its praises. It tastes good, it's good for you, it has no calories, what more could you want? Jason, don't be such a little bitch.
Yeah. Well, first of all, yes, he's still kind of, despite him being right, he's really bitchy in this movie. But I like how he throws it against, like, the cabinet, and the mom cleans it, like, look, doesn't even stain.
Yeah.
And, like, just the advertiser voice, she just kills me sometimes, but it's great.
Man.
It's fucking great.
Is there the point where Jason goes to the grocery store and just wrecks their shit?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure we talk about that, because I need to talk about it. Okay, cool.
Rutherford encounters the advertising executive named Nicole, who branded the stuff and woos her very quickly, weirdly, all while Jason has upped his sabotage game and started destroying cases of the stuff by losing his shit at a local grocery store.
This is the most insane I've ever seen, like, a 9-year-old in a grocery store ever.
Oh my god, he's on a tear.
He's on a tear, and no one can stop him. It's like a 9-year-old on fucking Adderall. Dude, like,
it works against him, though, because people are eating the stuff off the ground at that point. Like, it's fucking madness.
Yeah, but you know what? If they eat the stuff off the ground, it's a temporary thing, because, like, at least he destroyed it en masse. But also, like, it shows, like, in the movie, the stuff is stored in, like, 4 different places in this grocery store.
Yes. It's
and
weird, right?
It's fucking everywhere. It just shows, it's like, it's slowly making its way. It's in your homes. It's in your grocery stores. Later, it's in, like a hot dog stand in New York City, basically. Like, they have this shit fucking everywhere. Like, the way that they were able to convey how widely, pervasive this was is so well done,
and it's so fast. This is like literally in the first half hour of the movie, maybe.
Yeah, like you could not escape it. Like, it was fucking everywhere, and then you were labeled as a weirdo if you didn't have any.
Oh my god, consumerism, huh, Alex?
Right.
Ugh.
Better smoke those cigarettes.
Smoke up, bud.
Oh wait, this shit gives you cancer. Better hide that data.
But I've had a hard day, you know? Who wants to be, like, 80 anyways? It's fine.
Oh, no. Okay, so, then, again, this 9-year-old is just, like, he's taking, like, he somehow gets a hold of a bat, and he's, like, mowing shit down. It is beautiful to watch.
Oh, yeah, it is aggressive.
So, back to Mo. He visits Mr. Vickers, the man who approved the stuff at the FDA. But Vickers is being oddly coy about the origins and makeup of the addictive substance. Mo is rushed out as Vickers' dog, Ben, starts getting very aggressive, and it's a big-ass Doberman.
It's they frame this dog like it's fucking, like a giant, like a horse. Sandlot dog. Yeah, like it's fucking insane. But of course, as soon as Mo leaves, Vickers shares some of the stuff with his dog, Ben, but it isn't enough, and the dog then unplugs the telephone line and attacks Vickers by spewing the stuff right out of its mouth.
Yikes.
So we get our first, like, real, like, effect scene here, and it is nasty.
Oh, man. And you know what? I know this is from 1985, and I know these practical effects aren't spectacular, but they are fun.
They're effective. I say they're effective, yeah.
And you get, like, some nice, big, gaping mouths. Like, it's good.
Oh, yeah. I think the cheesiness works in its favor.
I agree.
With the tone of the movie, for sure.
I agree. Mo is at a local gas station and eventually gets ambushed by Charles W. Chocolate Chip Charlie Hobbs. After some failed karate moves, he lets Mo know that he is trying to find out more about the people behind the stuff as they bought out his company and turned his stock-owning family against him. So he's investigating. He's on his own.
Yep. Yeah, he got driven out. His whole family got addicted to the stuff. And he's also, like, a well-known person brand.
He's a local celebrity. Chocolate Chip Charlie.
He's fucking great too. Like, he's really good.
He's really
a lot of energy. Yeah, a lot of energy. Yeah. So the duo join forces, but find that the people of Midland, Georgia are acting fucking weird. And Charlie lets Mo know that his hands are lethal weapons just in time for the local clerk to be killed by the stuff as it exits his body. So it's a weird gas station scene where they join forces, but as they ask more questions, they're like, just get out. Like,
yeah.
We don't want to deal with this right now. Like, the people are being fucking strange. And it escalates from there.
Well, and this is when we get, like, this idea that the stuff is this omnipotent, like, collective consciousness.
Yeah, very Invasion of the Body Snatchers-y.
Yeah, because the gas station owner says, just leave us alone, or something along the lines in, like, the collective. And Mo is just like, it's just us, buddy, what are you talking about? and then it just kind of goes, it down spirals from there. But very effective scene, very fun.
Oh, I agree.
So the team are then ambushed by the local townspeople, but soon realize that their bodies have been taken over by the stuff and break apart when punched. Like, they just fall apart.
Yeah, it really weakens the fuck out of everybody. It's weird.
Yeah.
The effects are fun.
It's super fun. Like, literally, you just punch someone in their face, and their face just caves in. So it's like a one hit, like, that's it.
Yeah, and it's weird, because it's like a mix of, like, flesh and blood and stuff.
It's flesh and blood and stuff, literally. Yes, I love it.
Yeah, it's so funny. But Mo has, we skip ahead a little bit, Mo has a meeting with an executive and confronts him about the effects of the stuff. The executive tries to bribe him. So Mo then, he actually takes the bribe and regroups with Nicole as they try to find a source to relay this information to. But Mo lets her know that he pretty much burnt all his bridges in his corporate line of work, unfortunately.
Oh, what? Being a professional spy hasn't led you to many allies, Mo?
I don't know. He, you know, a spy and a snitch. He's just both. It's weird.
Yeah. So we cut back to Jason, who finds his family completely taken over by the stuff. They make a pitch to him very, very aggressively and appear brainwashed. They try to force him to eat the stuff, and he manages, strangely, to replace it with shaving cream to ward off their suspicions for all of 5 seconds.
Yeah. Once I see him do the shaving cream switch bit, I'm like, fuck, that's gross.
That's, I was like, ugh. I know. Well, also, I was like, couldn't you smell it? Like,
yeah, well,
if you put, like, a whole thing of shaving cream into a container, like, I don't know. Shaving cream has a very distinctive smell.
I agree. But then also their insides are all turned to stuff. Who the fuck knows how their organs function at that point?
I guess.
Yeah.
I also just have a very sensitive nose. Like, someone could put on shaving cream in another room and I could smell it.
It's weird. My nose is so not sensitive at all.
Really?
Lame. I have the lamest nose. It's fucking horrible.
Yeah. I have such a sensitive nose.
No, me, not me. I've been fooled. I'm like, hey, I was eating it. It's fine.
Oh, no.
But of course, Jason flees and is saved by Mo, who he weirdly trusts despite never met the guy. And Mo just happens to fucking be there. Whatever. It's contrived, but we need to get these people in the same spot.
The way that they wrote these characters together is so fucking funny.
It's great.
It's because, like, Mo is meeting with the executive who's trying to bribe him, and mm-hmm. he mentions, like, there's a kid in this random place, at this random location, who also knows that it's bullshit, and he's like, interesting, well, thank you for the money. Yeah. and then he like runs away, and then that's how they come together, is Mo literally finds this kid on a fucking whim on, like, first name only.
In the nick of time.
In the fucking nick of time.
Oh, it's great.
It's great.
And it's funny because then they meet up with Nicole, the other executive, on a private jet and make their way, of course, to the distribution center in a way to find the stuff from the source and figure out a way to stop it, but now they become a fucking trio. So yes. It's like the dude, his lover, and this fucking random kid. It's fucking insane.
It's so weird. And this whole thing comes together where it's like Mo pulls up to Jason, who's running away from his family, who are chasing after him, and he's like, get in, kid. I've seen the stuff move, too. And the kid is just like, okay, and like hops in the car.
Sure, stranger.
I'm gonna listen to you, and gets in the car and drives away. And for the rest of the movie, spoiler alert, the kid is with Mo. Jason stays with Mo for the rest of the fucking movie, and never once is there an Amber Alert. Never once anyone looking for this fucking kid. Like it's just like, and sure, the stuff, and we'll get into it.
I do like, though, that the kid starts throwing up in the car. He's like, I'm sorry, I just ate a bunch of shaving cream. And Mo's just like, oh, yeah, I guess in life sometimes we gotta eat
shaving cream. Sometimes in life you just gotta eat shaving cream. And you know what? I understand that urge.
Yes.
I never did it, but I understand it.
But yeah, it looks smooth.
It looks like it has a similar look and consistency as whipped cream, so I can understand... I can put this in my mouth and not feel immediately sick after.
Oh, definitely. And also interesting too is like the production detail. Mike Moriarty actually improvised a lot of his lines, much to the chagrin of some of the other actors. But I believe that was one of those lines where he just go riff,
some and they're like, "Fuck it, keep it in." Some of his stuff is so off the cuff in this. It's so funny.
Yeah, it works in character. It really does.
It works in character for sure. But that now that I know that he's improvising, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So back on the private jet, unfortunately for Jason, this is an adults only trip. And so he waits in the private jet while he's waiting there. The stuff comes alive and overtakes the jet, causing the young boy to somehow manage to flee out of the private jet and run into the woods, question mark?
Yeah, with some direction. Again, everybody somehow finds out where they need to be, but, like, flees with no direction. It's fucking weird.
No, everyone runs away with absolutely no idea where they're going, what their next step is going to be. There's no real thought. But somehow, because this is a movie and everything, and this is my movie, damn it, yeah. Everything ends up exactly where it needs to be. Somehow. Yeah.
Where the
plot needs them to be.
So meanwhile, Mo and Nicole's ploy to pretend to location scout at the factory is starting to earn some suspicion from the, again, weirdly behaving factory workers. So, who are closely guarding the secrets of the stuff. Oh, and of course, Jason is somehow there now and finds himself stuck in a truck container.
Yeah, he's in, like, the back, and he sneaks into a truck, and he's really trying some Mission Impossible his way, like, to figure it out, but then he gets locked into a truck, which, good going, genius.
Yeah. It's fucking hilarious.
So, now it's nighttime, and Mo and Nicole have completely forgotten about Jason while sharing a hotel and seeing a commercial for the sentient product. I do also want to mention, as they're leaving the private plane, Mo says to the pilot, "I need you to entertain this kid. If we're not back in 3 hours, go to this location and wait my instructions." He specifically said this.
Oh, he did?
He did. He said it to the pilot or whoever the fuck, like someone with the plane. And I guess they just said, fuck this kid.
Yeah.
So as the night goes along, Mo is attacked by a rogue batch of the stuff. In their struggle, the team learn that it is fire, in fact, that kills the stuff. They proceed to set their motel room on fire as the stuff starts growing exponentially.
Now, there's also a guy that tries to ambush them, and they throw him into the stuff and then fire it up. So he suffers horribly.
Yeah, he dies a terrible death.
Like, really fucking bad. But I love the visuals of this scene is actually pretty goddamn epic.
Oh,
like, it's
yeah.
Large scale.
It's large scale. You also see, like, the stuff. It's, like, covering this man, and the man's on fire, and it's just, like, it's very good.
Yeah, it took a lot of the budget, for sure.
Yeah.
The duo steal a pickup and follow a series of container trucks, one containing the missing Jason as they find out where the stuff is being mined. The quarry, of course, from the beginning of the film, because we already know this and we saw this. But, of course, this time, there's a lot more stuff there.
There's so much more stuff. It's a pool of stuff. It's a puddle of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, everyone is found out pretty quickly, and chaos ensues as Mo tries to steal the truck and bury the stuff. Eventually they escape, though, and he just so happens to steal a truck that Jason is hiding in. Because Jason was screaming at the exact moment that Mo was walking past it. Like, it's literally, like,
this is
the most, like, and you know what, I'm so sorry, but it is, like, it's lazy writing, but it's
so
fun.
Lazy. It's lazy, and again, it knows it's stupid.
It knows it's fucking stupid. But it is, like, the laziest writing, and it, where it's just, like, how do we get from point A to point B? We're just gonna draw this line and hope for the best, and hope people don't question it too much. Like, I can see someone like Roger Ebert thinking this is the stupidest movie ever.
Yeah. Now that we, like, break it down, I can see his frustrations, but at the same time, again, if you get it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's still fun as hell. Like, just because the writing is, like, a little lackluster, like, it's still fun as fuck.
It's funny, because, like, the plotting itself is kind of shit, but, like, the actual performances
are great.
Like, it's and the way it looks, like, it all really comes together.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And also a lot of action in this scene, too. Like, there's a lot of, like, people getting punched in, like, last-minute escapes and, like, all this shit. Like, it's really, really well done. But, of course, Bo finds an old source of his named Colonel Malcolm Gromit Spears, who is a very, let's say, stern vet who is leading a militia. And Mo uses conspiracy theories to get him on his side. And this, of course, he's played by Paul Sorvino, the guy
this
from Goodfellas. For
also listening. Really funny.
He's such an interesting, like, anti-commie, 50s, blah, blah, blah character. He's so fits the tone of this movie. It's insane.
So the militia then make their way to the factory, shoot a local worker, and cause a panic, which results in a planned mass suicide of the local workers. This ends up being a trap, as the stuff takes over the factory, consuming a few militia members in the process, but seemingly not able to venture too far outside. The group decides to make their way to a local news station so they can tell the public the effects of the stuff. Okay, so...
Yeah.
There's like a nom joke in here.
Yes. Yes.
And the colonel is just like, no one won nom, son. And it's just, and Jason is just like, sir, but what about nom? And it's just like the stupidest, like, I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? What?
Oh, I think it's, but we never, he's like, we never lost a war, son. He's like, what about nom? He's like, that was lost at home.
That's exactly. I when I was watching that, I was like, "What is going on?" And and then he's trying to like keep like the kids like his morale up, and like when he walks into a mass suicide scene, he's just like, "Take the woman out. She can't see this, even though it's the child who's just like, I want to see. I'm a man." Like, it's so ridiculous. It is absurd. It is like, it's Killer Clowns levels of absurdity.
It really is.
It's like Killer Clowns meets like Airplane levels of like kind of absurdity.
But it's also, again, such a commentary on 50s values and how they just mean shit when it comes to like, you know, corporate greed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it means nothing. It means fucking nothing.
Because all corporate, as everyone knows, all large corporations are, everyone has a suicide kit at all times.
Oh, but another good detail too, the way Mo gets him. It's like, oh, conspiracy theory. I know exactly how to play to these right-wing fucks. Like, he knows how to get this stuff what he wants, which, again, brilliant for Mo, but also shows where the militia's mindset is.
Absolutely.
It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
The militia then uses an army of taxis to make their way to Atlanta, Georgia, and start to put their message together, but are interrupted by the always eccentric Chocolate Chip Charlie, who wants to be a part of this broadcast. Unfortunately, Chocolate Chip Charlie is compromised, and the stuff explodes from his body and nearly overtakes the station until Mo saves the day with some good old-fashioned electricity.
Yeah, this was weird.
it's weird because I feel like the Chocolate Chip Charlie exploding, like, with the stuff come out of him is the best effect of the film, followed by the worst effect of the film, which was the fire and the electricity.
And the electricity. Yeah, Chocolate Chip Charlie exploding or, like, turning into the stuff and, like, his face just becoming this grotesque, like, mouth
is
very good.
It's so good. But, like the green screen effect of the fire and, like, the electric wires and shit with Mo saving the day. So, again, Jason and Nicole should be dead. They should be dead in that attempt for him to save. But, no, it just works.
I'm sorry. I mean, I know I can't really make this joke, but I'm going to because you started it. But, like, are we really going to criticize this movie for not being realistic?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Are we really gonna do that? Even though I've been making jabs at it for not being realistic this entire fucking time, like that's the straw that's gonna break the camel's back here. Bad electricity, like, science.
Maybe if the green screen was a little better, but you can tell they're running out of money at this point. Like, they just don't have it in the budget for this.
Yeah, they're like, we can't afford it. Like, Chocolate Chip Charlie was like their last, like, last ditch effort. So, eventually, finally, you know, the colonel gets to have his "my fellow Americans" moment, and they eventually get their message out, and across the nation, people are burning their reserves of the stuff. So, crisis averted? Question mark?
I love that this movie still lives in a time, though, which thinks that, like, truthful information will turn people's hearts. Like,
that's true. I love that they think a they think a single radio broadcast is going to make everyone listen. And they're all going to listen. And it's good prevails. And information and science is going to make everyone listen and believe the truth of science.
Well, see, this is pre-Fox News. There was only four channels or three channels available. Like, this, people's information was limited. So it makes sense that people would think on a plot-wise, like, oh, of course. And all I got to do is get the word out. Because remember, they did that shit in Born in Flames also. We're going to go back to the 70s. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but with the same thing. Like, if we can just get our message out, people are going to get enough people in the audience to really get them on our side. That was, like, this ideal shit.
That's, like, a thread that goes through so many action movies in the 80s. And, I mean, the 70s, too. But, I mean, even before that. But if you want to look at the 70s and 80s in action films, there's, like, that notion where it's, like, we have to get this message to this transmitter or to this, you know, radio station or to this person who can get the message out, quote unquote, and everyone's gonna know the truth or whatever the fuck. Like, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but bear with me. But that, like, that idea, and you're absolutely right, because the the information highway was, so to speak, was so limited that people really had no choice on where they got their information from. That was a reasonable thing to assume. But now we have a fucking podcast and we're screaming into the airwaves every week. And it's not like, you know, I could say that the sky is purple and that doesn't necessarily make it a fact.
No, no, definitely not. It's funny because, like, Don't Look Up is the exact opposite message. Like, regardless of how good your information is, Or how bad the information is, like,
if it's not sexy, if it's not sexy, people aren't gonna give a fuck.
They're not.
I mean, I know Joe Rogan is a hot topic right now, and I know some people that are listening like him, but, like, same shit there. You know?
Oh yeah.
Is not me saying we should cancel Joe Rogan. I don't think his podcast should be taken down.
Definitely not. But, like,
I'm all
It's one of those things where, like, regardless of what the actual truth or whatever the message is, like, people have picked their side.
Yeah.
Well, they've already chosen their opinion.
Exactly. Now we've gotten to a point where people, like, there's so much content on so much content that people have the ability to limit the content that they consume to exactly align with their worldview and their opinions.
Yeah, exactly. It's curated in that way.
It is. Yeah, it's extremely curated, and so it's the exact opposite of this plot line in the stuff, where it's like, if we get it out there, people will have no choice but to listen, as we know now, is complete bullshit.
Exactly. And the thing, I think conceptually at the time, it was probably a lot more believable for people to see a plot point like this and be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And we saw, you know, Nixon almost get impeached and all that shit. Blah, 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 blah. But now that it's so absurd. It's just fucking absurd. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. So that was our soapbox corner. Thank you for listening.
And then one more quick aside. It's so interesting that the fucking colonel was like, I will permit this colored man to da da da. I'm like, oh Jesus my Christ. God. Like, they went far with that one.
I know. I had that moment too where I was like, when did this movie come out?
Right? And then he's like, you speak any line from the communist line, I will not hesitate to shoot you on sight.
I'm like, he said, if you say anything that is aligned with communist whatever, whatever, if you say anything that is in code, I will not hesitate to shoot you in the head. And I'm like, oh my god, you're insane.
Yeah, very interesting character, I will say. I think he really represents the worst of, like, his generation, but he's so entertaining and ends up, like, winning. It's fucking weird. It's fucking weird. Upon visiting the same executives who bribed him earlier... back to the plot. Mo learns they're working on a new product called The Taste, which is 88% ice cream and 12% the stuff.
Jeez.
So at gunpoint, Mo forces the executives to eat some reserve containers of the stuff. And of course, the execs become addicted to their own product as Mo and Jason walk away.
Okay, Jason's added as a little caveat here, but at gunpoint, Mo forces the executives to eat some reserve containers with the help of Jason. He is holding them at gunpoint, and then Jason comes in, who's just like, thought you seen the last of me, huh, bitches? Mm-hmm. And is just like, eat it, eat it! And then he's screaming at them. Like, I'm like, oh my god, Mo, you're shaping a young mind and you're turning him into a fucking tyrant.
He really is, though. It's fucking hilarious. Like, and the thing is, Jace has been right this whole time, so he's getting this gumption early on.
Oh,
like,
he's emboldened. Fucking insane. He's emboldened.
He is emboldened. That's a good word. Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Again, this movie has such an interesting sense of justice. I'm just like, yeah, in a perfect world that would happen. But, like, you know, the execs are sitting there just consuming. It's kind of gross, but also I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Done. Well, and also, like, Jason's like, wow, just in the nick of time. And, like, the cops are pulling up. Like, it's just like, what are they going to do? Be like, oh, now they're addicted to their own, like, they got high off their own supply. Now what?
Yeah. That's fucking insane. Ugh.
Oh my god. So, unfortunately, the black market still exists, and before the credits roll, containers of the stuff are being sold by nefarious figures, complete with a shifty side-eyed glance at the camera, and game over.
Yep, credits time.
I love that. Like, it just, like, cuts to credits. So good. So fun.
Right, and the music and everything's kind of perfect.
Like, it's, again, very Killer Clowns.
Oh, definitely. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the stuff. That's the stuff.
What a fucking movie.
Oh,
I feel so, like, re-energized just talking about it.
I honestly, when I first saw it, it really blew my mind. Like, it really, really did. So I'm like, it was between this and another movie that I'm going to have to cover a different time for, that I wanted to introduce the podcast month with. But, I mean, Alex, I mean, while we're here, what did you think of the stuff?
I liked it way more than I thought I was going to. I was having, like everything was slightly off kilter yesterday. Like, mm-hmm. I think I was texting you. Like, I couldn't fucking focus. I was just, like, kind of running behind on everything. And then I was, like, trying to get all my shit together. And then you were just like, have you seen the stuff yet? And I was just like, fuck! No, I haven't. I'm garbage. And I was like, I was doing laundry when you texted me. And long story short, the washers were broken. So I had to throw off my whole groove doing the laundry. And so I was already frustrated. And it was just a whole bunch of things. And I was just irritated, and they're like, no, I have to watch this fucking movie. And I sat down to watch it, and it was so fun. I, like, wasn't mad.
Right?
It just immediately, like, I was just like, oh, this is fun. I'm happy now. Like, it just, it was so enjoyable.
Like, oh, cool. Joy.
Yeah.
It's like, just what I needed.
It was exactly what I needed. And I was so worried that I was, like, my view on the movie was going to be, like, colored by the fact that I was just in a shitty mood.
Yeah.
But it was perfect. It was so fun. When you mentioned that it was funny and, like, just, like, lighthearted, I was just like, okay. Okay. I will be fine. But I really liked it. It was very fun. Even though I was up until near midnight watching it, I very much enjoyed it. Very much worth it. I had such a blast.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I feel like it's one of those kind of weird movies that is our style. Like,
I was going to say, yeah, I think this is, like, you know how you thought that 13 Ghosts, I was really going to like it? Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I liked this.
Oh, good.
Because I was worried that I was like, oh no, is this going to be like another 13 Ghosts situation? And it wasn't. Like, this is exactly, like, the kind of schlocky, B-list, ridiculous kind of horror that I love.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. It, like, it's, again, and also kind of a much-needed break, honestly, from, like, I don't know, they don't make movies like this anymore.
No, they don't.
They really, really, really don't. So when they come around, they're good. It should be appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, when I first watched this, I watched it with a significant other, who was very important at the time, and she totally got me, which I think I was going through something at the time, and just put it on. And it was one of those experiences where I was like, okay, well, you know, when you're kind of in a funk, and,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like your whole night, but
I was in a shitty mood.
Yeah, no, but I mean, and she had been, like, hyping up this movie for, like, a while, and this is one of those ones where I'm like, okay, you know, let's give it a shot, let's put it on. And just brought so much joy. It was like, again, same thing. You're like, I needed it. Mm-hmm. Like, I needed it. And it felt like oh, this is stuff I like. This mm-hmm. is the kind of content that really, to me, I just find very, very enjoyable. And it's a good respite from everything else.
I didn't know you had seen this before.
Yes, I had seen this before, yeah.
Cool. No, that I also like that we had identical experiences watching.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, definitely. And I honestly, like, you know, in spite of me fucking that whole thing up, it's great that this was a very, very good, how do I say, like...
Memory?
Memory, yeah, absolutely a very good memory. It's one that I'm like, I think Alex would also like this.
You were very right. This was so much fun.
Yeah, no.
Good call. Thanks. To kick off your birthday month.
Right? And then, you know, it's also helped, again, dive into the whole capitalism, Reagan era, 80s mm-hmm. stuff. Stuff we talk about that I know this movie does. It's quintessential almost in providing an in-era commentary on stuff that we deal with regularly now. Stuff. I keep saying stuff. But, you know.
The stuff.
Yes. Yeah, stuff that we deal with now. That's just what it is. Now, in having watched this, what quintessential 80s messages are you getting from your first time screening of this movie? Like what is the philosophy of the stuff?
Definitely anti-big corporation, anti-mass production, capitalism. Definitely got that vibe.
Yes,
when definitely. I was watching, like, even before I kind of got the politics lesson, mm-hmm. the U.S. history politics lesson that you gave at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
I definitely got those vibes, and the criticisms, while still being very funny, is always something I appreciate. I mean, I talk about this all the time on the podcast, but horror movies are perfect for kind of letting people express fears and anxieties of society at large.
Yes.
In like a safe, quote unquote, way, because, you know, we get to see the cathartic gore or gruesomeness of horror tied into the real legitimate fears that people have, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a great, or alien invasion films in general are usually tied to war or invasion, mm-hmm. like foreign invasion anxieties, right?
Yes.
So this, getting to see that tied into like capitalism and kind of the counterculture's fear of big corporations and capitalism kind of taking over everything, which did eventually happen. Thanks, Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, where's our Mo fucking Rutherford?
I don't think there's. Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of corporate espionage on the Bezos super yacht. But so I think that was really cool to see, and it also very sad to be like, oh, cool, people were concerned about this in 1985.
People were concerned about this. Our own president in the 1979 was concerned about this shit. That's the crazy part.
And then fucking Reagan screwed it all up and was just like, mm-hmm. no, you guys are perfect just the way you are.
Oh my, I fucking hate
buy
that
more. The idea of trickle-down economics to this day will never not make my blood boil.
Honestly, and you're describing right now the way that he talked to people, like, babied them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that we look at. I know this is going to get, like, more political right now. Sorry. But, look at the way our last president before Biden, Mr. Donald J. Trump, talked to his supporters on January 6th. In his message, he's like, go home. You guys are all special, and we love you. That was to his people. He talked to them like they're fucking babies.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I'm just like, dude, you know you're being pandered to like a motherfucker.
Absolutely.
But not in like language that incites like, or that provokes insight. It's in language that is like a pacifier.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And I mean, I'm reading right now a book from George Carlin. It's called When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops? And he talks about euphemisms and how people used to say, like, belly, and then stomach. And it's like, well, no, we language is too hard, and what if we want to, like, convey something? And so it turned into tummy. And little things like that to, like, soften the realism behind, you know, you don't say tummy cancer. So, it's, right?
That's such a George Carlin way to phrase it.
Yeah, but it's one of those weird things. It's just like, he's like, dude, like, we're doing it, and for what? For the bottoms to not realize the actual horrors that they're actually living through?
Yeah.
Like, it's a Band-Aid on a much larger issue. And this movie definitely, I think, touches on that a little bit. Because a big aspect for me that it comments on is marketing. I mean, we work in marketing. Marketing is poison sometimes. But yeah. Also,
I mean, we were talking about it earlier, how you were just like, I can't keep doing this. But yeah, for those who don't know, Anthony and I both, we met in marketing, but I'm a marketing director. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's working, doing the marketing thing too. Like, that is what we make our bread and butter on, is mm-hmm. basically doing that.
Yeah, and then on that too, I mean, it's up to us to kind of see where trends are going and, like, how to basically commodify it.
Or predict, even.
Yeah, and then to see how efforts pay off and stuff like this. But, I mean, it's just one of those things, like, they clearly had other systems in place prior to this. Systems always change. But the goal is always just, like, how can we get more out of, like, how can we squeeze the stone? That tends to be the philosophy. And this movie kind of nails it, and also the intentions behind it, because, I mean, that's not, because I guess that's a little off on that one. Some companies I've worked for in the past, and my current one too, have noble goals, and then some other ones I feel like were very much just in it, like, exploitation is not outside their bounds. So, you kind of get one or the other oftentimes, but the exploitative ones just, oof.
Yeah.
They'll do shit like this. Like, those executives are not far off. They are not far off sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah, but then playing it up for laughs, where it's just like, I'm gonna be, like be a suit and be as laughably evil as possible, but you're absolutely right. It's truly not that far off from the reality of the situation, which is the fucked up part.
Yeah, no, it's fucking...
Where, you know, especially people in these large, like, mega corporations like Amazon or Walmart, where the decisions that they make has a rippling effect that affects the livelihoods and lives of so many people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, you gotta get your packages within 2 days, Alex. Like, what are you gonna do?
Okay, yeah, so I was just talking about this the other day, where I was just like, I remember when, like, the 2-day Prime thing started, and now, like, I can barely imagine my life without it. Like, how fucking sad is that?
It's because you consume the stuff.
Right. I am part of the stuff. Like, I'm actively now, like, trying, like a lot of books that I buy now, like, I go through alternative places, and yeah, it takes me, like, a week and a half to get them, but it's like, it's fine. I'm gonna get them. Mm-hmm. It's not the end of the world.
Exactly. The urgency's not there.
Yeah, the urgency's not there. I don't need, like, these 4 books in 48 hours. Like, my head's not gonna fucking explode.
You're still not gonna read them for, like, 3 years. It's fine.
It's true. I collect books, and then they sit on my fucking bookshelf and collect dust. Like, I have so many books that I'm staring at right now that I have not read, because I was just like, I'll read them eventually.
Yeah.
I collect books to collect dust.
It's they so look bad. Good. They look good on the shelf. It's fine.
It's fine. But, yeah. Good question.
No, thank you. It's, yeah. So, the little fun one here. The Stuff decides to make a comeback in 2022. All right.
Okay.
It's the third iteration of this particular substance. They can't use The Stuff, and they can't use the taste. What do they call it? And how do we market this bitch, Alex?
Oh, man.
I mean, and what function is it going to have?
Sure. So you have the stuff, you have the taste. Do you have something? I need to think.
You know what? I would say they don't harken directly back to the product that made people get addicted and crazy.
Okay, so good.
They're gonna have a different function for it. It's gonna be a hair gel. It's gonna be called the Dew.
The do.
The do.
Because okay. I think if it still gets in their scalp, they're going to keep wanting to fuck using it.
Okay. So it's going to be incredibly gelled up.
Yeah, yeah. And because all they got to do is put it in, they don't even care what their hair looks like. Everybody thinks they look good.
Okay.
There you go. The do.
Okay. Okay. So my idea, it's called Amazon.
Okay.
And we offer them 2-day shipping.
Okay. Very, very innovative concept, Webster.
No. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Even better. We keep it the stuff. No. We call it... We'll figure out a name for it, but we gotta make sure that this sticky white weird substance finds its way onto the we basically sponsor... a lot of OnlyFans accounts out there.
I was going to say, damn it.
We sponsor OnlyFans accounts.
The second I thought of it, you said it. I was like, it's a lube called...
Yes. Yes.
Called Stuffed or something.
Stuffed. I was going to call it the splooge, but yeah, okay.
The splooge.
The splooge.
Damn. Oh, man.
Oh, look at us. Look at our marketing brains working. Yeah. No, we were on the same page. That's good.
That's funny. It's like, yeah, it's... Yeah, okay.
All right, we did it.
That's it. And then it's just, people can't get enough of it.
No, and it just has to get into an orifice. Doesn't matter if they consume it or whatever.
No, it just needs to get into an orifice. It does not matter.
Exactly. I was thinking scalp at first, but obviously there are other options. So
we have options. No, there's the do.
The do. The most benign of the options. And the sploosh. Or whatever you want to call it.
Stuffed.
Yes. Oh, we did it.
Oh,
we
fucking did it.
Oh, boy.
I needed some levity after talking about the evils of capitalism for 30 minutes.
Right. Okay, now we've made it this far. What would you rate the stuff out of 5 really justified grocery store outbursts?
Ooh, really justified grocery store outbursts. I mean, really, who hasn't wanted to gone totally ape shit in a grocery store at least once?
Oh, absolutely.
Whether you're corn
beef is how much?
God, whether you're 9 or not. I'm going to give it 3.5.
Ooh. Okay.
Not quite a 4. But not a 3. I'm going to give it 3.5.
More than 3. Yeah, I agree. You know what? I think this movie's kind of brilliant. I'm not going to give it a 4. I'm going to give it a 3.75. I'm going to go a little higher. I think, honestly, it's...
Anthony is contractually obligated to rate a little bit higher than me.
Yeah, generally speaking, yes. But I personally think, like, it just... It's a hidden gem. And it, to me, is very underrated. Did not see the success that it needed to. And should have a lot more recognition than it does. It really should.
I mean, I'm glad it has the cult recognition that it has now.
Mm-hmm.
Wish it had made more money back in the 80s.
I agree. But you know what? Also, on that note, too, maybe if it had been too successful, we'd see a lot more ripoff sequels and blah, 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 blah. It's kind of good that it's just this one thing.
It's true. I don't think I would have liked to have seen the stuff to Electric Boogaloo, you know?
Yeah, yeah. More stuff.
More stuff.
More stuff. Oh, boy. Well, that's it, guys. That's it. Birthday awesome. Month episode 1 down. Yeah.
So happy birthday, Anthony Fuentes.
Yeah,
first week of the month. Next week, we have some guests joining us. Anthony, yes. Would you like to hint for next week? Well, first off, that was the stuff from 1985.
That's right.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. That was written and directed by Larry Cohen. Next week, we are covering something very fun, and I have no idea, I have no thoughts, because I have no interaction with this content.
Okay, I'm going to relay the content right now. It is literally maybe, I would say my favorite game of all time. We're going video games, baby.
Yeah.
We're going video games.
At this point, once we started covering video games, like, we have to do a video game for your birthday month, so.
Yeah, and it is a horror-based game, but it is my number one game of all time. It has a crazy fucking development, and it genuinely changed gaming forever. And I cannot wait to tell this story, because I've been trying to tell it for a very long time. So we get the chance to do it next week. I can't wait.
Very excited for that. I, as per usual for video game episodes, know absolutely nothing. Very excited. And we will, of course, have some guests for that as well. So it'll be a delight. So I hope you join us next week for that. Thank you so much, everyone, for sticking around this long. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can also leave us a rating on iTunes as well as Spotify. If you feel so inclined, we do also have a Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. We do offer tiers as low as $5 a month, so please check us out there. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony and wish him a happy birthday on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Damn, I'm getting old.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And if you find the stuff, honestly, might as well eat it.
Yeah. And if you find the splooge, we should get royalties for that one. So
yeah, we need royalties.
Definitely.
Bye, guys.
See ya.